Okay, we're doing Navi. We're up to the book of Judges, what's called the 11th chapter, and we're up to the story of Yiftach. What we had seen is that the Ammonites from the east had come to attack, and the Jews had gathered, and they couldn't figure out who would lead them to war. And now we have a situation where the Jews on the eastern side of the Jordan are being attacked by the Ammonites, the nation from the east, and they need a leader. They don't have an army that's ready to go to war. And now we pause, and the Navi takes us back and fills us in a little bit of what's been going on in the city of Gilad. We have to understand that Gilad was a territory where people were not too learned. You're talking about the eastern side of the Jordan. You had many murderers in the city, in the area of Gilad, in the eastern side of the Jordan. And the people there had issues. And that's why they were the first to be exiled. Meaning among the tribes, they were the most problematic tribes. The tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan. And so, in this section, there was a man named Gilad, and he had many children from one wife, and he had a child from another wife, a wife who came from a different tribe. And he named that child Yiftach. And now his brothers said, "You're from another wife, from another tribe. You don't get to inherit our father. Get out of our territory." And they kicked him out. And the elders in town were silent. It was wrong. They had no right to kick Yiftach out. And Yiftach is being picked on by his brothers. He's not a little boy anymore, but he has no choice, so he flees. He leaves the area. And he forms a gang. And he has a bunch of gangsters with him. And now that the Jews have a threat of the Ammonites that are threatening to attack this territory of Gilad, so the elders say, "Who could lead us to war against the Ammonites? Ooh, we heard of him. His name is Al Capone." Okay, not Al Capone, but in those days it was Yiftach. So Yiftach was a name that sent shiver down people's spines. So they tell Yiftach, "Come, we want you to be general to lead the war against the Ammonites." And Yiftach says to the elders, "Hey, don't you remember? You hate me? Don't you remember? You guys kicked me out. You backed my brothers when they kicked me out. How come you're coming now that you need me?" So the elders say, "You're right. Come with us. Help us fight the Ammonites. And we will establish you as mayor of the whole area of Gilad." Now you see what politics is like. So Yiftach says, No. If I am victorious in the war, it's pretty obvious I should be mayor of this whole area. I saved the whole area. Of course I'm the governor. That's not a question. I don't need you to offer me that. If I lead the war and I'm victorious, then no one better say anything. Of course I'm the governor. So the elders say, "Okay, we understand your hint. We're willing to do what you've said." And so they bring him back. Yiftach says, "If you want me, you appoint me leader now, not after the war." So they say, "Okay." He says, "After the war, of course, I've earned it." So they say, "Okay, we accept." They have no choice. They bring him back to appoint him as leader. Now, we have to notice the difference here between Yiftach and Gideon. Gideon won the war, and after the war, after he'd proven himself, the Jews tell him, "Mesholbanu gamata, gam bincha, gam ben binecha. We want you as king, we want your son as king, we want your grandson as king." What did Gideon say? And this is after he was victorious. Gideon says, "Lo yimshol, no, I'm not going to be king. Lo yimshol ben ibachem, my son won't be king. Hashem yimshol. Hashem is your king. What do you mean he's king?" That was Gideon in his humility, even after he won the war. Yiftach, in his arrogance, he hasn't yet done a thing, right? He's the gang master, but that's it. And yet, he's saying, "You want me? You appoint me as leader now." Okay, they have no choice. They appoint him as leader. And Yiftach sends messengers to the king of Ammon and says, "What's going on here? What are you coming to fight me for my land?" And the Ammonite king says, "When you guys left Egypt and you entered Israel, so you took my territory on the eastern side of the Jordan. Give it back to me and I want peace. All we want is peace. The ancient Yasser Arafat. We're looking for peace. Just give us more land and we'll have peace. Just give us more." So Yiftach sends messengers back to the Ammonite king. You know, when the Jordanians wanted a peace treaty with us, so one of the rabbis, he was teaching at Mechon Meir at the time, wrote an article, and he said, of course we want peace with them. Let's look at the Tanakh. They'll give us all the sections of Jordan that the Tanakh say belong to us, and then we could talk about peace. What can we talk about peace if they didn't give us our territories yet? That was before the Jordanian peace treaty. So the Ammonite king over here says, give us back our land. And Yiftach sends word back, and he says, we never took the land of Ammon and Moab. The truth is that we did not, because God forbade us from taking that land. But what had happened was, a few years before we approached that territory, there was a massive war between Sihon and Og and Ammon, and Sihon and Og captured that territory from the Ammonites, and then when we overtook Sihon and Og, so we got that territory, but we never took it from the Ammonites. There was an earlier war in which the Ammonites lost that territory when we were victorious against Og, the king of Bashan, so then we got that territory. So that's what he tells them. When we came out of Egypt, we came here. And he goes through the whole story. And he says, when we asked you to go through your territory, no one let us. And then when we came here to enter the land of Israel, the king of Sihon attacked us. And when we were victorious against him, so then we conquered all of Sihon's territory. And that's it. We never took your territory. Ah, he's not mentioning, but what's not being said here is that this territory was part of the Ammonite territory, but we weren't the ones who took it from him. Sihon took it from Ammon, we took it from Sihon. So he says, we never took your territory. Now he says, look, if you look at history, you lost a war to Sihon, and Sihon lost to us. So now do a little bit of logic here. If you couldn't stand up to Sihon, and Sihon couldn't stand up to us, do you think you could stand up to us? Look back. Look at what happened to Balak when he started up with us. Look at the last 300 years. 300 years have passed since we took this territory. Where have you been? Why are you waking up now? And you should know, I didn't do anything wrong here, but you are illegitimately attacking us. And so Hashem, who judges all, should judge between Israel and the Ammonites, and you have no legitimacy to your claim or for starting this war. And the Ammonite king would not listen, and so he's preparing to attack. Yiftach gathers the people of Gilad and the neighboring people in Menasheh, and he leads them to war, and he takes a vow. And this vow, the Talmud tells us in Tractate Tanis, was improper. He said, Hashem, if you let me overtake the Ammonites, so then the first thing that comes out to greet me from my home, when I come home in peace, I will dedicate it to you, and I will sacrifice it and burn it completely in your honor. He is victorious. He completely defeats the Ammonites all the way into their territory, destroys 20 cities within their territory. They were attacking us. He fought them back into their territory. They lost 20 cities. So this was a tremendous defeat for them. For years, they wouldn't dare lift a nose against Israel. And now he's headed home. And everyone's talking about how God gave us this great victory. And one person wants to go out and greet him. He has a single daughter. And as he's approaching the house, instead of the sheep coming out to greet him, and he'd take the chosen sheep to offer God, out comes his daughter. She's with her tambourine and she's singing. It's his only child. She's singing. He sees her. He rips his clothing off himself and he weeps and he says, whoa, my daughter, you killed me. I took a vow and I can't go back on that vow. So she says, what? He says, well, I said to God that the first thing that comes to greet me will be slaughtered in his honor. So his daughter says, well, you know, Yaakov Avinu said to God, whatever you give me, I'll give you a tithe. Did you notice he slaughtered one of his 10 children? He also said that he'd give God a tithe. And she tries to argue with her father, and he says, no, I took a vow, I got to do it. you got to do it. She says, Dad, if that's what being pious is all about, if God gave you the victory and that's what's supposed to happen, but give me 2 months to go and weep over the fact that I'm never going to build a family. Let me go with my friends and lament my fate. So he says, go. And she goes with her friends and they spend 2 months weeping. And at the end of 2 months, she comes back home and he does his vow. What does he do? So there are two understandings as to what happens here. One understanding is that he really offers her as a human sacrifice. That's a simple reading of the text. Another understanding is that he locked her up in a house and she was not to see anyone. She was to spend her whole day and night, her whole life, just praying before God. That's how he's fulfilling his vow. And from this story, we learn the concept that the Mishnah says, Lo ama'aretz chasid. If a person wants to be pious, but he doesn't know Torah, then his best intentions can cause the greatest suffering to other people. He means well, but that's not good enough. The bottom line is, Yiftach meant well. And nonetheless, he made a grave error. So with the best intentions, he destroyed his daughter's life. So this is a tragedy. But the tragedy is worse. Because our sages say that at that time, there was someone who knew of all this, who could have stopped him. His name was Pinchas. Pinchas was still around. And Pinchas said, Yiftach knows he has a halachic issue. He knows I'm the chief rabbi. He knows my address. If he has questions, let him come to me. Yiftach says, I'm the king. I just won the war. If Pinchas has a solution for me, he should come knocking on my door. And between Pinchas' insistence and Yiftach's insistence, the poor girl went kaput, whichever way you go. And so our sages say that God held it against both of them. God would not talk to Pinchas again. Pinchas lost his prophecy. And Yiftach died a very painful death where wherever Yiftach would go, limbs would fall off him. And that's why he never got proper burial because he was buried in many different cities because on different occasions limbs would fall off. He got a disease that would cause his limbs to fall off. And that's how he ultimately passed away. But we're not finished with Yiftach yet. The people of Ephraim, if you remember them, they were these unlearned shepherds and they were the ones who came and harassed Gidon after his victory. They come to Yiftach and say, what's wrong with you? You endanger all of us, you attack the Ammonites, you don't invite us for this war, we're going to burn your house down on you. And Yiftach says, I had a threat from the Ammonites. And everyone in Israel knew we were under threat. And you knew it too. And you didn't show up to help us out with the threat. And on the contrary, I risked my life and I led the people to war. And God gave me victory against them. Now you show up after the war and say, why weren't you invited? Yiftach gathers his men and attacks his brethren, the Jews of the tribe of Ephraim. And not only do they attack them, but the tribe of Ephraim had crossed over the Jordan to come and harass Yiftach. So what Yiftach does is he sends his men and they capture the crossings of the Jordan and they say no one can cross until we verify if he is from the tribe of Ephraim or not. Now the tribe of Ephraim would try to slip by and Yiftach's men would say, could you please say the word Shibolet? And the tribe of Ephraim all had a lisp. When they would try to say Shibolet, it would come out Sibolet. And the second they would hear that, they would kill them. And so Yiftach's men killed 42,000 Jews. 42,000 Jews. Now, as horrible as this story is, there's a silver lining here. A few years ago, the government under Sharon kicked many Jews out of their home. You probably heard of Gush Katif and the expulsion of Jews from their home in Gush Katif. And when this happened, people went on record on the radio and in newspapers and you had headlines. The worst tragedy in Jewish history. When in Jewish history did a Jew ever turn on a Jew like this? And when I saw that, I burst out laughing. You know, I said, you know, these people are, I'm sorry, they don't know what they're talking about. You look at the Tanakh, and unfortunately, our history is filled with stories, and this is probably the first one where Jew turned against Jew. 42,000 people were killed. I sort of think that's a worse tragedy than Gush Katif, and I'm not coming to belittle Gush Katif. It was bad, and it's a terrible stain on our history. But to say it's the worst tragedy in Jewish history, gee, I'm sorry. 42,000 Jews being killed by a Jewish general, yeah, I think that's worse. So this is the first, unfortunately we're going to see others, where the Jews actually killed their brethren. And think of how cruel this is. You know, they capture the crossroads and they won't let them come back home. So Yiftach remains in power for 6 years, and we described how he passed away. Yes?
Are we better than them today?
That's a broad question which deserves a broad answer, and we don't have the time for that now. Yeah?
Well, because you're not making a value judgment, better or worse. You know those circumstances that you say things like, and 20 years they were afraid after the victory to lift the finger. 67 to 87 for 65, and then you also think in terms of things like, you know, the warring rabbinic faction. This one is a speak there. You pick us up. Hasn't changed so much. It may be on scale, and hopefully for the better. And you know, what kind of real autonomy and how much squeezed by the United States and this that. These are debatable things. I don't know. Just off what his motivation regarding the crime and different things, but it's amazing how. You know, time kind of just all kind of runs together with certain events. Similar things can be shown.
Yeah. Yeah.
What year was this? Is it not?
Well, it says it's been 300 years since we left Egypt, which would put it at the year 2748. Okay, that's... Okay. You asked the question, so Bezrat Hashem, at the end of class, I'll give you a pamphlet, which we used to give every guy a copy of at the beginning of this class on judges. And please ask Rav Listman how, and make, let's say, 15 copies, and we'll make pamphlets for everyone, and you'll have a timeline there, including all the kings, all the judges, and maps. So I used to give it out in the beginning of this class, in this series, so everyone will have it, and then... So now you got yourself a job. Well, after class, I'll give you the pamphlet. We just we let guys keep it. That's why I don't have any more. I have one more. Okay. Yeah.
Taking it for granted that he was halachically forbidden from murdering his daughter to appease his
wife. Correct.
What about after he, assuming that that's not what happened, that he locked her up instead?
Right.
And on like day two... Maybe someone would have thought, hey, maybe we should go ask the Gadol HaDor, like, since she's just, you know, locked up and praying and stuff, so we could, like, let her out. If we, like, you know, is that, like, something that would have been locked out? Well, once you did it...
No, could have been... Out, no. It could have been undone, right. So meaning, in that sense, it was a far more difficult story if she was locked up. You figure, how long did it take till she went insane? A week, a month, half a year? Some point, a person flips out being locked in a room. No?
It's a little ambivalent. The English translation says the pilgrimage there every year, but it implies that she was, and then, as you say, also the simple reading is what he did.
So it says that the girls would do a pilgrimage 4 days a year. They would weep over her, but it's not clear whether the pilgrimage was to a live person or to her burial spot. Okay.
Kirchhoff was the receiver of tradition. Like, he was the only guy who knew this halacha. You can't, like, do this.
That deserves a broad discussion. No. It's an excellent question. Okay. Excellent question. Yeah. Our next story is really the story of the judge named Ivtzan, otherwise known as Boaz. So, in his time... there's a young girl named Ruth who has converted to Judaism. And after Ivtzan marries off his 30 sons and 30 daughters, and then they all die, an Ivtson remains without a soul in his life, and then his wife dies. And then we know on that fateful night when Ruth comes down to the granary and offers him to marry her, and he swears, no, I won't do it. And he says, let's go see, halachically, my uncle has precedence over this mitzvah to marry you. And then he goes and offers the uncle that very morning, and the uncle says, no, I'm not interested. She's a Moabite convert. Who knows if that's kosher or not? And even if we say it's kosher, who knows what future generations will say? And then Ivtson marries her that day. And that night, they consummate the wedding, and they're intimate. And shortly thereafter, an hour or two later, he dies. He doesn't wake up the next morning. So Ivtson lived a tragic life. He was the leader of the Jewish people. It was his prayers that ended a famine. And in his lifetime, he saw all his children die. 60 children, 30 sons, 30 daughters, and his wife. And he didn't live to see that his young new wife, Ruth, was pregnant with Oved, who will be the father of Yishai, who is the father of David. But Ivtson, from the tribe of Judah, from the tribe of Yehuda, he is our next judge. He judges the Jewish people for 7 years, and then he passes away. And we just described his tragic death. After Ivtson, we have Elona Zvuloni. We don't know much about him. He judged us for 10 years. And then Avdon ben Hillel HaPiratoni. So now you see the name Hillel. And he had 40 sons and 30 grandsons, and they'd all ride on these horses. He'd have 70 descendants riding on horses, and he passed away. And the Jews continue sinning, and they're given into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years, and we're up to our final judge, whose name is? Shimshon. What does the word Shimshon mean? Either from the word Shemesh, which means fortification. Shemesh, right? Shemesh is a tower, a wall, a fortification around the city. Or Shemesh could also mean the sun, right? So we begin our story with a great sage named Manoach. And Manoach and his wife are old, they have no children, and an angel appears to the woman and says, you will have a child. And don't drink wine, don't drink old wine, don't eat anything defiled, because the child, when he is born, will be a Nazir, he will be dedicated to God, and from your womb onward, he will be a Nazir, and he will start the process of saving the Jewish people, because he doesn't really finish the process, he will start. So she comes to her husband, who's the chief rabbi of Israel at the time, and says, you know, a prophet appeared, he looked like an angel, very scary. I didn't ask him where he's coming from. He didn't offer his name. And he told me I'm going to be pregnant. I shouldn't drink wine. I shouldn't eat anything defiled. The child is going to be a Nazir. So Manoach prays to God and says, please send back the prophet you sent before. Let him instruct us what we're supposed to do. So God agrees. And the angel shows up. The woman is out in the field. And this time she doesn't let him say a word. She runs back, calls her husband. And her husband comes. The angel says she should do what I said. So Manoach says, okay, and what was that? So the angel says she should be careful not to eat anything that comes from a grape, no wine, nothing defiled, just as I warned her. So Manoach says, maybe we'll eat some meat together, we'll offer a sacrifice together. The angel says, I don't eat from your bread. You want to offer a sacrifice, offer it to God, not to me. And Manoach doesn't yet understand this is an angel. So Manoach asks him, buddy, tell me, what's your name? So if your prophecy comes true, we'll tell people that you said a prophecy, it came true. And the angel says, why are you asking me my name? My name is covered. It's not hidden. It's not revealed. So Manoach prepares a sacrifice. And a fire comes out of the rock that they were preparing the meat on. And the angel shoots up into the heaven with the fire. And when they see that, they realize it's an angel. And Manoach tells his wife, I guess we're going to die. We saw an angel face to face. And his wife says, but wait, he told us we're going to have a child, right? And he showed us all these miracles. So obviously we're not going to die. And in fact, the woman became pregnant already. She was pregnant by the second time they met the angel. And she has a child. She names him Shimshon. Notice she's the one that gives the name. And Shimshon grows up to be one of the greatest sages in Jewish history. So he's born, he's crippled. His two legs don't work. So Shimshon has to walk around with crutches. And he's broad. He grows up to be tremendously broad. I mean, figure from here till the kioskim. That's how broad he was. Huge. And he never cuts his hair. So he's got swaths of hair around him. He's walking on crutches. And he's blessed that his seed is like a faucet, like a spigot. He has limitless seed. He could just keep on spilling his seed. And he is one of the greatest sages that ever lived. When he joined the high court, he was the only judge who was so smart that he didn't need to convene a court. Any case that came before him, he could sit down and figure everything out on his own. He was a super genius. It says that his judgments were like God's judgments. He was the top judge in Jewish history. And Shimshon goes down to the city of Timnas and he sees a Philistine girl and he comes to his father and mother and says, you know, I saw a woman there. I want you to get her for me for a wife. Now that sounds like a very strange conversation. You saw her, so you want her as a wife. What do you know about her? So his parents reply, like any good Jewish parent would reply, what about a good Jewish girl? You know, your brothers have kids. I mean, your nation has kids. Why are you going to the Philistines? And Shimshon says, Dad, I want her. She's found favor in my eyes. Now, the parents don't realize that really God has caused them to go this route because Shimshon's tactics are compared to the tactics of a snake. Shimshon's tactics are going to be very different from all his predecessors. Every other judge would convene the people, set up an army, and have a proper war. Shimshon isn't going to do that. He's going to lead a one-man show, guerrilla warfare. Shimshon, on his own, is going to weaken the Philistines. And we have to ask ourselves, why? Why? Why didn't Shimshon do what everyone else did? Why didn't Shimshon get the people together, form an army, and attack? Every other judge did. So why didn't Shimshon? Yes?
Did you say it was as broad from here to the kiosk?
Probably a little more, but yeah.
What does that mean? Like hundreds of feet across?
Right.
The chest?
Yes.
What?
Okay, so...
description is certainly like a
cartoonish,
weird.
Right. That's exactly the picture I want you to have.
Right.
So that when you look at Hulk, you'll think, ah, little old Hulk.
And that's
yeah.
Another detail you threw in there was also bizarre.
That he was crippled in both his legs?
And he had this, you know, pious man, not supposed to be running around. He advertised unlimited seed, and it's also bizarre.
Wait, okay, wait, we have to see that, right?
It's just the idea, this is, I mean, it's. Yeah, there are the inside script, but you know, it's sort of like you say, you see this, you want us to picture this Gog Magog, not human character who, for some reason, is unbelievably genius but insists on marrying this Gentile girl who's running around with, you know, an unlimited, you know, it's a bit odd.
Right, lot, we're gonna have to.
So, is this like the same stuff with Goliath?
Oh, very good. That's a beautiful correlation. You're 100% right. We're going to get there. You're right, because the commentaries say that when Goliath came to the scene, that's exactly what was happening. Meaning, until Goliath comes to the scene, from the days of Samson until Goliath, the Philistines don't dare do a thing. And when they have their Goliath, so they say, that's our Samson. You're 100% right. Meaning, that correlation that you just sensed is really a correlation that our sages allude to throughout the parasha. Meaning, and that's what David is coming to teach Goliath. You're already taking me way ahead. But that's what David is saying to Goliath. He's saying, you think it's about size? You think that's what's going to make you win? You think Samson was successful because of his size? No, it's a question of whose side is God on. That's the exactly what's happening. The meeting between David and Goliath is a revisiting of the story of Samson. Yeah, you're exactly on the mark. Yes, Mr. Morgenstern. Perfect. Yes.
Goliath was, you know, like a very large person, but not a kind of skyscraper, you know.
Okay. So obviously, as we've been discussing with Midrashim. Right, so the question in all these midrashim is, should we take it literally or not? But first, let's take it literally, and then we can revisit it and try to understand more depth. But first, let's take the story literally. Afterwards, you're right, we have to analyze, okay, so what are we being taught here, you know. So, Shimshon goes down with his parents to Timnas. And his parents take him to the Philistine vineyards. And they show him, look at how they grow their grapes. You see, we are very careful when we grow grapes, because in the laws of kilayim, of crossbreeding, the Torah prohibits crossbreeding between animals, the Torah prohibits crossbreeding between plants, but the prohibition of grapes is more severe than all the other ones. Meaning when it comes to growing grapes, we're even more careful, we keep a greater distance between our grapevines and any vegetable or any grain that's growing. And the Philistines, on the contrary, they have their grapevines growing, they have a million things growing in between. They have crossbreeding all over their grapevines. So his parents take him en route to the Philistine girl, they show him the Philistine vineyards, and they say, you see, they're not careful to keep the grapes separate from the grains, separate from the vegetables. They're also not careful to keep their married women separate from other men and have a tradition that every child knows who their father is. What are you doing looking for a girl like this? Now his parents are forewarning him. We're going to see that's exactly what happens. Shimshon ultimately will find his wife with another man. But at this stage, we're not yet up to a wedding. He's just told his parents, I want a Philistine girl. And his parents are telling him, what are you doing? So he says, no, I insist. So he tells them, come down with me. So they go down with him to meet the Philistine girl. And on the way, they take him to the vineyard. And they give him this lesson. They're excellent educators. They try to get him to understand by seeing the vineyards. Am Yisrael is compared to a vineyard throughout Tanakh. And Shimshon, well, he's a Nazir. He's not allowed to eat grapes. So Shimshon doesn't walk through the vineyard with them. After they finish their class, he says, Mom, Dad, I'll meet you at the other end of the vineyards. I got to go around the patch because I might come to pick a grape and eat it as I walk through the patch, and that's prohibited. So as a Nazir, I shouldn't be walking through the grape, through the vineyards. And from here we learn a concept that's quoted often in Halacha. Lech lech amrina nezira. We tell the Nazir, go, you go the long route. Schol, schol, go around. Don't walk through the vineyard. You go around just like Samson did. Lekal malot tikrav. Don't come near the vineyard. When you have something prohibited and you know you might just come to eat from it, don't do it. So Samson's going along and he's walking around the vineyard and suddenly a young lion starts roaring and charging at him. And Shimshon sees the lion, and there's no way he can humanly defeat this lion. And this is where we'll pick up Ezachim next week.